Thank you everyone for coming. Thank the host, the Kolodnys. We wanted to have the share so that everyone sees that in order to make queso, you have to buy a new oven. You have to make sure your kitchen's brand new. That's the only way. That's the only way to do it. the truth is that I gave this shir to the men, and Rabbi Kolodnys said, I think you'll make my life much easier if you give this shir to the women also. So hopefully we'll make things a little bit easier. We'll go through some halachas. The things I wanted to cover were basically three parts. One is cleaning, basic cleaning for cleaning. What are we supposed to do for cleaning for Pesach? A little basics about kashering the kitchen, how to do that, and then also something that people keep on asking, just lately people have been asking more and more, is confusion about cosmetics and medications and vitamins and all these type of things, what we're supposed to do. So as far as cleaning goes for Pesach, the truth is that last year I discussed a little bit about how far you have to go in terms of how many toothpicks you have to use up per corner to try to get at every crumb. But for two reasons, I don't know if I'm going to discuss that so much right now this year, because at this point, where it's a week before Pesach, so anyone that went through their whole house with toothpicks already doesn't want to hear that they don't have to do that. And anyone that hasn't done it yet probably isn't planning on doing it. So I'm just going to go through some basic areas and see the things which, based on questions that I've gotten and questions that people seem to ask, what bothers people, what areas have a little confusion. So the concept basically is that although Chazal do say and the Rishonim say that they used to... there were those people, Anshei Maisa, Big Tzadikim, that would go through their house and they would wipe the walls down and make sure there was mamash no chrome chametz. But that wasn't the Ikar Halacha. So the Ikar Halacha is that pirurim, crumbs, are batel. They have no importance, they're not chashuv, and therefore any crumbs, really don't have to check for them. You don't have to worry about crumbs. So that means that a room, which is an open room like this, you really just look at it and see, is there any type of chametz that you would actually pick up and eat. The only thing you really have to check for in cracks, let's say in cracks in a couch or in an area, is in an open area, is a type of chametz that you would actually pick up and eat it. So it's like a Cheerio or a pretzel, something that has some sort of chashivas. Crumbs and stuff like that, that you don't have to really worry about those things at all. So you don't have to clean for that, you don't have to worry about that. The only thing is that wherever that there's a concern that a crumb may fall into food, you know, may come into your food or something like that, there you should be worried about even the smallest piece of chametz. So what that basically means is that for the rest of the house besides the kitchen, you really don't have to be too concerned about anything which is smaller than a pretzel size or something that you would actually pick up and eat. That means a typical bedroom, you could really go in, look around, maybe sweep it out, carpet, whatever, vacuum, and that's really fun. You could open the drawers if you have little kids, so open the drawers and look in it, but you don't have to really clean it or scrub it or anything like that. As long as you're pretty sure that there's no significant size pieces, that's really fine. Taking some sort of toothpick and going through every sock drawer in the corners and making sure that there's no chametz, which some people do, is really not necessary. Now, toys and stuff like that, so again, kids go there and kids with food and chametz, but again, you only have to check for that. So if you have shelves of toys, you could really take everything out, look at it, and put it back. You don't even have to scrub or clean it. As long as you don't see any big pieces of chametz. And inside the bins also, if you could see that there's no chametz in there, that's fine, you could take everything out and look, but you don't have to really clean all that. Where it makes a difference is toys or books, kids' books and things like that, that they're going to bring to the table and they're going to use at the table where you're eating, that's different. If they have like a set of dishes that they bring to the table, or so, that's more of a problem because there a crumb from there could fall into the food. So there, you know, there's maybe there's something to be more concerned about, and that's kedai to clean well. But other than that, toys that are going to stay in the playroom and you're not going to be eating around there, you don't have to be worried about. Also, bags, book bags, and school bags, and purses, and things like that. Things that people are not going to be using over Pesach, you don't have to worry about it. First of all, I mean, again, you could look at it and see that there's no leftover snack or whatever from Hanukkah time that they didn't tell you about the pretzels that are still there. But that doesn't take very long. A bag that you're going to be using on Pesach, let's say you're taking a family trip or something like that, and the kids are going to use their bags, that probably is kedai to actually clean out well, shake it out properly, and make sure that there's no crumbs, because there, again, the crumb could fall into their food, and that's more of a problem. And same goes with a purse. So if a person could be, you know, keeping things there on Pesach and going on a trip and putting their hands in, and they can get crumbs in their fingers and stuff like that, that's taka kedai to clean well, because that you're coming in contact with and eating around. The kitchen is the same thing. Now, also, there's the difference if you're going to be home for Pesach or you're not going to be home for Pesach. So, I don't know if most people here are going to be home for Pesach or not. I don't know if it's kedai, but basically, if you're not going to be around for Pesach in your house, so and you just want to fulfill the basic, besides selling, you know, selling the whole house, so then really all you have to do is check the whole house this way. You know, all the cabinets and everything you don't have to worry about. You could sell all that, and you just have to look for chametz in the open area. So you sweep the house down, and that's it. It's not so complicated. In the kitchen, if you're going to be home in the kitchen, that's where things get a little bit more complicated, because in the kitchen you're afraid really of any drop, any small amount of food falling into the chametz, falling into the food. So there, the cabinets that you're going to be using for your dishes, there it's kedai to clean well, and if you're covering it, then you may not have to be so worried if you're covering the corners and all that, but cover it and clean it, and then you'll be okay. The fridge, also cover and clean it, and that will be fine. Cabinets that you're not using, so you really don't have to do much. You're selling it anyway to the guy, so you could just close it up. If you don't like selling real chametz and you're afraid that maybe there's a cookie in there, so you could open it and look and see if there's anything there. Maybe pick up the plates and look, but basically you don't really have to do much. You don't have to clean it.
So what are the things that you are selling?
Well, I'm saying, let's say in your kitchen, you're not gonna. Most of your cabinets that have chametz dishes, you're leaving your chametz dishes there. So then you don't have to check that. So the things you're gonna empty out and put your Pesach dishes, that's where you should be cleaning and covering it.
So the covering is just to be extra careful that no crumbs.
Right. But theoretically, if you want to scrub it, you want to clean, you know, you could clean it well and put some like fantastic something in the corner, and then whatever's there is nifsal machil, is not really to be eaten anyway. It's a crumb which if you pour something on there, so you don't have to cover it. I think that covering it is easier. You don't have to worry so much about the corners then, and things like that. But if you clean it well, that's also fine. Same thing with the fridge. If you clean it well, you don't have to worry. So I think if you keep this in mind, you'll really realize that it's that everything around the house is really pretty. You could keep it under control theoretically. If you're just looking for these Cheerio-sized pieces, then you don't really have to scrub anything around. You just have to look and make sure it's clean, and just clean like you're cleaning for Shabbos. You know, sweep and look carefully, but you don't have to really be scrubbing. And the kitchen is where you really have to start cleaning.
For backsplashes and countertops, those do need to be covered.
Yeah. So I'm going to get to that in the kashering part. Yeah. So this is in terms of cleaning. I guess people know their own kids, but the truth is, a chazal say they're supposed to check pockets of clothing. And I was just this Friday, I took the kid, I took my kids out, and I gave them some nash. So I asked my son, where's your nash? He said, I have it all, don't worry, it's all in my pockets. And took it all out, and he had piles of, it was cereal, it wasn't comets, it was kidneys, but, you know, he took it all out of his pockets. So kids, the truth is that clothes and stuff like that, that kids have, I'm not sure exactly, that just was more to me, that it could be there is no problem with pockets, and it may be worthwhile to have the clothes that they're going to be using on Pesach to just check over again properly. But that's, again, the things that they're using on Pesach that may come to the table, and they may bring it to the table, and then all of a sudden, you know, hey, Tal, look what I found, you know, that it could be kedai to make sure that their clothing is cleaned. Okay, so again, so in the kitchen, we basically, you know, the cabinets, the fridge, kedai to cover. In terms of kashering it, there's a lot of different minhagim and a lot of different shitas. A lot of different rabbanim say different things. So, you know, everyone should follow whatever they've been doing and their own. But the two things that I'll just say is that, first of all, glass top stoves is a shaila and there's different shitas. So everyone should make sure you have a shita about that. And if you do kasher it, so you kasher just the area where it becomes red in the burner itself, but between the burners is an issue. So you have to figure out how to work around that between the burners. And it's becoming more and more popular in the glass top, so it's just good to realize that between the burners can't be koshered on a glass top stove. Even according to the opinions that you could kosher the glass top stove itself, which is a shayla, but there are people that say, the Star case says you could, but the area in between doesn't get koshered. So that would mean that you have to either make sure your pots are always smaller than the burner, or make sure it's very clean, or raise it somehow so it's never touching the in between.
I did come up with a system for covering the area in between.
And it doesn't crack it or anything like that?
No.
No.
I buy the heavy duty tin pan covers from the large tin pans, and I need a pattern for the circles, and I cut it out exactly.
So it only is over the area of the burner itself.
Exactly, the burner is the only thing that's open. Right. And
then in between, and then it doesn't act.
It's a pattern. The first year I made a pattern of my stove top, so I knew exactly where to cover it up.
Right.
But it's that heavy duty tin. It's a whole thing. Anybody who wants to come look at
it. Yeah.
See,
right. Because it is complicated on a regular stove, gas or electric coil. The area in between you could just cover with tin foil, and that's fine. Here, and anyway, it doesn't really, the pot doesn't usually touch the area between either, usually, because it's raised. But on these, where it's touching in between, that's where it's much more of a problem. The other thing is with the sinks is that I know that what people tend to usually do is they pour boiling hot water on the sink. It's called irud. So just to point out, when you're doing that, it's very complicated because the water has to go directly on every single spot. So you have to go back and forth on every single spot when you're pouring the hot water. But what the problem is on the side of the sink. So it's very hard to make sure you hit every spot, because if you hit the top, it's just going to roll down, and how do you hit each side as you're going along? So this is a big problem. So you have to either be very careful, and if that's what you've been doing, that's fine. I'm not saying you have to, but I think it's becoming more popular to use inserts in the sink, because you don't have to worry about that. Cleaning it really well, and then koshering and pouring the boiling hot water on every single spot. If you use an insert, you know, line it and put the insert in, it's easier and less of a shayla. So, you know, that's what people have asked. I've been telling them to use the insert, but again, I'm not telling you that to do differently when you're doing, but it is something to think about. Now, the counters, what you mentioned, the counters, people with a granite top counter, so you could really kosher with boiling hot water. And that's much easier. They could just pour boiling hot water up and down, make sure you hit every spot. The back is also really a problem, because a pot, you know, I assume a pot, if it's on the counter, can be pushed to the back and touch the back. So during the year, you could have chametz pots hitting the back, and on Pesach, the Pesach pots hitting the back. So the back should also probably be either kosher or covered. I don't know if everyone does that, but I think the back should also be taken care of. At least the bottom half of it, you know, at least the bottom part where. And also another thing is that underneath the cabinets, you should run like some sort of shmata, just clean underneath the cabinets also, because during the course of a year, it could be something can get stuck over there from steam or something like that. Something dirty could get there, and boiling hot pots are mamish right underneath there. So it's gonna have a problem from there. So that's a few things in the kitchen.
Should I cover it or should I clean it?
No, I don't think you have to cover it. But you just take a sponge, you know, something, and just wipe it down once. That's all. That's fine. Just something that will get off.
It's not Tom from the steam that we have to worry.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be so concerned, right? I think it's better to, but you should just make sure there's no real anything, any pieces there. Yeah, anything inside is not a problem. Just the pieces.
And the cabinets also have to be covered in the sides.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. No. You don't have to cover the cabinets on the side. The corner is the main thing, because the corner is where crumbs can get stuck there. But on the side of the cabinet, there's no crumbs there. Probably, so you don't have to worry about that. You probably wipe it down, but I don't think you have to do more than that. I'm just saying the backsplash is because there you really could get, it's like part of the, it's like the oven type of thing, where you can, hot food could get stuck there.
Can you pour hot water on a tile backsplash?
I guess the same thing as like a sink. You just have, you could. You just have to make sure you're hitting all the spots properly. Yeah.
A tile.
Yeah, well, granite.
What's a tile made out of?
Something porcelain.
Glass? No, tile you can't kosher. No, I don't think tile. No, porcelain, right, no, you can't kosher that. If it's tile, you can't, no. Porcelain, it's either porcelain, ceramic, or glass, right? So, yeah. Stone, like a granite, I'm just looking at this. So that you could kosher, yeah. But the angle is very difficult. Yeah. So I don't know if you have to do the whole way up, but at least, you know, right on towards the bottom, it's good to do something about it. Okay. So, is there any other questions about this? Basically, just, you know.
I'll wait till you get to it.
Okay. The hood on top of the stove, right? So that should be cleaned very, very well, because there I think there's grime, there's real stuff there. That should be cleaned really well. But I don't think you have to cover it. They say to cover.
Yeah, but you have to be very careful not to cover the vent.
Yeah, when you're covering your oven,
that is very dangerous.
Yeah, when you're covering the stove, so like this, when you're covering the stove, if you see, so if you're covering the stove from like this. So this is gas. So what you would do is, you know, between the burners you would cover, and you would want to cover this area also because the pot could touch here. But the problem is right here is a vent for the oven. And if you cover this, then this is going to melt. This screen here is going to melt. Yeah, some people learn that though, yeah. So, not an RF, but this whole thing here is a vent for the oven. The ovens used to be that they used to vent from the back, but now they changed the whole thing and they vent from here out onto the stove. So it's good to know that also, because if you're cooking open, like milchik or something, and you're having fleishik, like something sitting right here, some people say it's a shayla because it's all venting into on top of that food. But if it's covered, it's okay. But so therefore, when you're covering this, it's kedai to cover this, but be careful not to just go straight all the way, because then you're covering the vents. You should just cover this, and then if you want to cover this also, but don't seal up your whole oven, because it's a problem.
Okay.
another question, the grates on a gas oven. I heard two things. You have to burn it out the same way that it was used to make closure for Pesach. So somebody told me you could just turn on the fires and let it go for a while and burn them out wherever the pot will touch it.
Right.
Or you can put it
in a self-cleaning oven. In a self-cleaning oven, yeah.
Now, and if you do that, do you still have to cover the grates with silver foil?
No, as long as it was, you could, if you put it in the self-clean oven, it's fine. Any one of those two ways is okay.
Does it have to be self-clean? Sometimes it ruins the finish.
Yeah.
Just go up to like 500.
It should really, no, it should really be the self-clean. It's not going to be self-clean. The other way to do it, the other way to do it is you take each burner on the gas, you turn it on the highest, mm-hmm. and then use like a blech.
Right. Oh, so put it on the
Yeah. So use a blech, so the blech spreads out the heat evenly, so all the whole thing is going to get very hot, and do that for 15 minutes. On each burner, but don't do that on all four burners at the same time, because it's going to burn down the whole. The chas v'shalom can get very, very hot.
Right.
If you do four on the highest like that with a blech, it will get very hot. So do one at a time or opposite, two at a time, but don't do more than that. So you turn it on the highest with a blech, and that will kasher, all the parts. It will kasher this piece and the grate.
Yeah, I was thinking that
clean,
like,
clean.
Something
I know,
it's
clean.
Not yet, you get ready for Pesach, right. But then again.
Right, I know, yeah. As long as it's clean. Clean.
Okay.
You could also, I think it works if you take like three layers of heavy duty foil.
Oh.
Take heavy duty foil and fold it over three times and put it on, that would also work.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to use the bluff at all. Right.
Or bait, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know if that's strong enough. Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah? Okay, so something that will spread out the heat. The point is you want to have the heat spread out on that area, and then you don't have to put it in the oven.
Okay, and the oven grates, the kosher, you have to put it on self-clean?
Yeah, so do they have those anymore? On the electric coil ovens, the grease pans, right? So those also. So that actually, because it's below the fire, that doesn't necessarily get kashered when you do this thing with the blech. So that you should cover with foil. That you should cover with foil. If it's clean, you should clean it and cover with foil and just get new ones because they're not very expensive.
Right.
So that.
Cover.
Yeah. If it's clean.
Yes.
Clean. Right. Now clean means if there's like this black thing that looks like it was there since 6 years ago, that's called clean. That's okay. something that's no way for you to get off. That's okay. In terms of the oven itself, an oven that can be self-cleaned, really, according to Moshe Feinstein, the only way to kosher an oven by doing it self-clean, and for sure the racks. So you should really have the oven go on to self-clean. If you don't have a self-clean oven, so the racks, you should try to find someone that does. And put your racks in someone else's oven and have it self-cleaned. That's really the best way to do it. The oven itself, if you don't have a self-clean oven, you should just turn on the highest for 2 hours, and that will kosher the oven.
What about the racks?
No, that's what I'm saying. The racks, see, because the racks touch the food more directly than the walls of the oven. So the racks, you should self-clean it. And those racks, take to someone's house and have them, and whoever, that you could stick in someone else's oven.
So.
Warming drawers, I think, the sarcay on the place, they say can't really be kosher.
Right. But I was just wondering what the reason behind it was, because if you kosher the same way that you use it, so if, let's say it only goes up to, 150 degrees.
Right.
So
right.
It only went up to 150 degrees,
right.
So why can't you just
because
I know it doesn't burn it out,
right.
But it never
it's a little complicated,
so
but basically the point is that the kosher, the way you use it means that you kosher it, if it was dry heat, it's dry heat. If
right.
It's, but once it's considered that it was used with fire, you need real fire to take it out. So the only way to do it is with the real fire. The warming drawer doesn't get hot enough to kosher.
Right.
So you should just cover it and that's it.
Now
and
the big ovens that they have the drawer underneath that they call a warming drawer, but if you get up to the same high temperature, if you get up to 450 or whatever, that would probably be.
If you get up to 450, then you could turn it on for 2 hours on 450. And that's okay. Now, if you're self-cleaning the oven, well,
no, this is a separate warming drawer.
Right, I don't think so. It's just warm.
Yeah.
Now, if you are self-cleaning the oven and you want to be machmer to self, to with that sheet, which is better, then it may, then some people also hold you that the inside of the oven, this part right here, doesn't get kashered. The door, and especially because it's glass. So you can't kasher glass for Pesach. So maybe worthwhile to cover the inside of the oven with foil.
Inside the door.
Inside the door.
Just the door.
Just the door. The inside of the oven gets kashered, but the door may not.
The self thing doesn't take care of the glass.
No. Well, no.
Done, then.
No. Yeah. No. The inside of the door. The inside of the door is. I'm not saying you have to, but you know, if you never did, you don't have to. I'm just saying, if you know, there are those that say that that it doesn't get to it, so you just cover the inside of the door only.
Like only for self cleaner, right?
Yeah. If you don't have a self clean oven anyway, well, yeah, but. I think now most people. It's also kedai to speak out. Also, by the way, if anyone's on the new ovens, a brand new oven, the new self cleans don't work the same way they used to. So it says self clean on it, but if you call the company, it only gets up to like 200 degrees, and the way they do it is with high steam.
Might call it a steam clean and not a self clean.
No, yeah, I think I'm not sure. I think they changed it. So you have to be careful if you're buying a new oven that the self-clean is really a self-clean. But it's only within the last like year and a half, so if your oven's not that old.
I have a question. When you self-clean, the boiler on the top, it's also kosher?
What's the boiler on the top?
The coil on the top. Or the flame on the top.
In the oven, inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, inside the oven, everything. Just the warming drawers, no, because that's separate. No, self-clean, I don't know what goes on, but that takes care of everything. Yeah. The only thing that maybe is the door, that's all I'm saying, but everything else in the oven is fine, the racks, everything. And if you're not afraid of your grates, you could put those inside the oven also. Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Is there any other questions about this, about cleaning, kashering the kitchen, obviously?
Is it possible to kosher an electric hot plate?
I think you're just better off cleaning it while uncovering it.
Mm-hmm. You've got Teflon, most of them have Teflon on, though, but, that's the problem.
Yeah, I don't think you could really kosher it. You can't kosher it. But is it used with directly, or you use it during the year with foil?
With foil, usually.
So then replace the foil. Mm-hmm. Maybe put two layers on, just in case.
So I could use my chametz.
But it has to be really, really cleaned very well, that there's no residue on it.
What's the plata that you've had before? Same thing, right?
A blech is different. That gets much hotter, because it's on the fire itself. A blech, you should get a paste of the blech, that's what they say.
If I use my hot plate, my electric hot plate, for a blech, I don't use a blech on my oven.
Yeah, I understand.
Could I
electric hot plate.
And put foil on it and use
it? I understand.
Control or not?
It does have a controller.
And it goes up to like 400 degrees?
It goes up to 480 or 500.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you could really kosher it, but I'm not sure you have to kosher it. I think it's enough to cover it.
Use it for black on Shabbos Pesach, you know?
Right. I think if you clean it very, very well and you put two layers of foil, it's okay. It's could that probably, yeah. I don't think it could be kosher. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to get to was the medications and all this type of the medications and vitamins and cosmetics and these things which people have questions about. So the idea basically behind the principle behind all these things is one idea, is that if the item, the chametz, is no longer ro'i l'achilas kelev, means it's not fit to be eaten by a dog before Pesach, so it's not really called chametz. The only problem is that if you're eating it, then you're treating it like food. So if you take this spoiled thing and then you eat it, so you're treating it like food, that's where it's a problem. So the two factors are what we have to always think about when you're dealing with these items is, A, are you eating it? And if you're not eating it, is it fit to be eaten by a dog? What's the status of it? So the basically the halacha is like this. medications, first, well, we mocked them, it says, I saw Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky has a sefer on Hilchos Pesach, so he writes there that even though the halacha is going to be what we said now, which is that we're going to see, you may not need kosher Pesach on many items, since nowadays, you know, a lot of people became a minig, and the kind of people do, it's not so hard to find, etc., etc., then if it's not a big deal, it may be worthwhile just to follow the guides. But, that being said, we'll just go through the halacha to see what's necessary. So, medications, there are two types. There's capsules and liquids. Capsule medications, if it's, are generally considered not roi l'achilas kelev. So, any medication really theoretically should be fine to take. Unless the mamash has chometz gomer, and you know that it has chometz in it, it's some sort of wheat, and mamash has chometz, then and you really know that, then it may be worthwhile to look into a supplement or some other brand. But basically, if you don't have to really be concerned generally about most medications, because the chometz is not considered fit to be eaten by a dog, and also when you're eating it, it's not considered you're giving it chashivas, because you're taking it as a medication, not eating it as a food. And therefore, it's not a problem. Vitamins is different in that sense, because vitamins you're actually taking as a supplement for your diet. So vitamins you're actually eating, it's considered eating, so vitamins should be kosher l'Pesach. You should check into vitamins. Unless it's for a medical reason.
What about for prenatal?
Yes, that could be considered like a medical reason. Means you would eat that. That's not supposed to be part of your diet. Mm-hmm. It's not something which you're not getting enough calcium, or you're not getting enough something, you know, iron in your diet, so you're taking a supplement that you're doing specifically for a specific medical reason. So that's like medication. But something that just like a supplement, you're not getting enough of something from your diet, which you should be getting, that you should look into. But liquid medications, and this is going to be true for a lot of things, which is liquid alcohol, things which contain ethyl alcohol in the ingredients, that's really chametz. It's made out of grain. And since it's still in its liquid form, the place can say you could really drink it. You could really theoretically isolate the alcohol, and someone that's a real alcoholic would really drink that. So anything which has ethyl alcohol, yeah, I don't know how you pronounce it exactly, but this alcohol in the ingredients, that's really chametz, and that you should avoid. So liquid medications is kedai to look into, because it's not nisvah mechilas kelev. Liquid medications, and also included in that is like perfumes and things like that, which have a lot of alcohol. So those items really are considered chametz, and not only you shouldn't use them, you should, if they're not on the list, you should put it away and sell it for Pesach. You shouldn't have it around.
What about
Purell? No, so that's okay.
That's like stearic alcohol. Right?
Yeah, well, you're not drinking it. Also, right. You're not drinking it, so then no problem. And also, it's not in its pure liquid form. The perfume is still considered in its pure liquid form.
So,
okay, so we'll get to that. Things that you're actually eating. Okay, so medications, if it's not liquid medication, capsule medication is generally okay. Liquid medication could either look into. Perfumes is could either look into. If not, you should put it away with the chametz and sell it. Vitamins, you should get a kosher Pesach vitamins. But everything else, which means shampoos and different types of makeup, you know, nail polish, etc., cream, eye things, or everything like that is all okay. So all creams, all shampoos, and all makeup is okay, because they're not roi l'achilas kelev, and you're not eating it, and it's not in its pure form, so there's no problem with those things. Soap is a shaila, because soap may be considered eating it, because what you put on your skin to really, you know, and you're rubbing it in, that a cream is different, but soap, they say, is kedai to look into and get good soap. Now, things that you're putting in your mouth, like toothpaste and mouthwash, that already, Ramosha writes that it's kedai to just get the ones that's certified on the list, and I think basically, if you look on the list, all basic toothpastes are certified, so it's not such a big deal. So, you know, the things to look into are soap, toothpaste, and mouthwash, perfumes, and liquid medications.
Do you need to get new lipstick?
New lipstick, they say it's good to get also. Not because it's chametz, but because maybe there's chametz on it. I guess you could cut off the top layer.
Somebody once told me that if you cut off the top, then it's fine.
Right, I guess you could just cut. That's what I'm saying. It's not really a problem because it's the ingredients. Right, it's just because. Right, so it's that, yeah, you can get rid of the first layer.
You could cut the top part.
That's a funny story. Because they sell push-up makeup. Like everyone, like, they think
they
like,
sell,
like,
I
you know,
so
it's like,
here
you're saying
that
it's not even necessary.
It's not really, no.
Some makeup has some based on how it is.
But I'm saying, but it's not Royal Achilles Kelev. It's not Royal Achilles Kelev. So it doesn't mean to say that someone has that custom and they're doing it completely unnecessary. In other words, there may be a reason which is not the halacha, more than the halacha, to be extra careful. I'm saying, but the halacha doesn't require that.
I have a question about children with
the
drill. It's not on because
it's
already
left. It's a liquid. What does it have in it? Does it have alcohol in it?
It doesn't say on the back.
A why is it not? A liquid. A
but for kids, like I don't. Is there something else that is? Because I like my kids have shown an allergic reaction to something. Like I want to have, you know.
You need to have something. Right. Look, these things. The only thing that you should. Yeah.
It's on the
side. Chewables are very.
Yeah.
The chewable. The only thing on the Star Kalis was
individual. Any medication which is chewable or a pill is really generally okay. It's really the liquids which are more of the problem because you may really have. I think so, yeah.
Even if it has flavor?
Well, this I'm not talking about kashrus the whole year.
Uh-huh.
Kashrus the whole year, you have to, you know, it may be a shot of kashrus the whole year if it has a flavor.
No,
but otherwise, I don't.
You know.
I don't think the Benadryl's on any of the lists, though, if I remember from last year. Yeah, one thing you could do, by the way, with all these things, it's just not practical. The place can say what you could do is before Pesach, you could dilute any of these things. So if you have, you could dilute any of these things before Pesach. So I don't know if you want to have around in your cabinet diluted Benadryl, but you could do that before Pesach. And put it in water, in other words.
That makes it.
Before, if you do it before Pesach, it becomes batel.
Oh,
how so much do you need to dilute it? Like how much?
The amount of chametz that's there, yeah, but you don't have to make 1/60th of 60 times water. The amount of chametz in the Benadryl, there should be 1/60th of the whole combination. So it's really not too much.
So
there's
like
very little chametz in there in the first place. So you just have to put in a little water. You know, put in some water. I don't think it has to be too much. And then if you dilute it before Pesach, that's okay. They say that if you're on some sort of prescription for liquid medication, then maybe a shiloh, you could dilute it before Pesach also. No, that's practical.
You shouldn't have like anah of chametz also.
Yeah, but not if it's not royal achilas kelim. If it's not fit to be eaten by a dog, it's not considered food. So it's not chametz. Chametz is not wheat. Chametz is food, which became chametz. But if it's not food, it's nothing.
Yeah, but there are like wheat creams that people use.
Yeah, but you can't eat that.
Right, but perfume you also can't eat.
No, perfume is considered perfume since it's the alcohol. It's the alcohol in its pure form, and you could really separate the alcohol and leave it in that form, and drink it.
What about Play-Doh? Do you have to?
Play-Doh is a big question. You definitely shouldn't use it on Pesach. Yeah, you think you should sell it with the chametz. Because Play-Doh, it may be even edible.
Right.
So Play-Doh is a good chayla. Yeah. I think most of these items. Also, household cleaners and all that is all okay to use and own on Pesach. Most of the things which we said, even if it's good to look into, except for the perfumes, you don't really have to get rid of it. Even if you don't want to use it, you don't have to get rid of it. You can leave it in your shelf and see what happens. But the perfume, if it's not on a list, which I don't know if they have a list, but if it's not on a list, then you should just put away and sell with the chametz. Okay. Any other questions?
Household cleaners, as far as cleaning for Pesach, like
like using.
Yeah, dish soap. No, I forgot to mention dish soap. Things that you use in for the dishes. Do they have a list for that? Yeah, I think the dish soap they say is kedai to just check because that actually goes on the plates that you're actually eating.
So something like.
It's not necessary. It's not necessary, but it's kedai.
Like parchment paper also should have a check.
So.
That's for all you're right.
Yeah.
Starting with muffins and
muffin tops. Yeah, don't sell that.
I just found that out.
But as far as using like a cleaner to clean something to have like ruins any comments, we use organic cleaners that are non-toxic because my kids literally lick the floors after we clean because they like the smell. So we don't use like Fabulous or anything, we use like the
Okay. None of this stuff is a problem. None of these things.
Can I use that?
None of these things is a problem.
Right. Yeah. But can I use that to? Well, well,
I know it's not. It's not. It's not. Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
No, you have to use the ammonia stuff. And I don't know.
Bleach and stuff like that.
Like, yeah. Can I just use my? I mean, I wouldn't eat something after I sprayed it with, even if it's non toxic and whatever. Someone eat it. Like,
if it's not right lachila, yeah. If it's not right lachila, I think it's okay. I mean, where are you doing it anyway?
Like,
in a place that there's no real chametz in
the room. Outside of the cabinet, the cabinet doors, on the, you know, toys that my kids are going to be carting around and
yeah.
Cabinet shelves. Everywhere
we go to
cabinet shelves anyway, but
yeah,
it makes sense.
It's okay, don't worry.
What about spray starch or ironing?
Yeah, that's all okay. Because, yeah. In the Shulchan Aruch it says that starch on your clothing is a problem, but that apparently was really like heavy stuff that you could peel off and eat it. But I don't think that's what that is today. Okay, so this is the basic halachas, but it's always important to remember that what we're trying to really get to is the Yom Tov of Pesach, and the Yom Tov of Pesach. We try to get rid of all the chametz and all the sa'ar. It's called in the Torah sa'ar and chametz. And the netzi, actually in this week's parasha, it's an interesting idea. The Torah says that on the mizbeach, when you bring a carbon, you can't put any chametz. You can't put any sa'ar. Any sa'ar is, we translate as yeast, but it's not really yeast, but it's sourdough. It's what makes the dough rise faster. So the netzi says, why is that a problem? Why can't you put that on the mizbeach? And he explains, very interesting, that the whole idea is everything else, every other ingredient or spice, it adds a taste, it adds something to the food. So you add salt, it wouldn't have been salty before. Now you added salt. You add sugar, it's sweet. It's sweeter than it was before. But yeast or sourdough, really, if you would have just left it alone, the dough would rise anyway. It would just take longer. So what are you doing? You're putting in this thing because you're in a rush. You want to try to have it happen before it's really going to happen by itself. So he says the remez is that, and the Chovas Halvava says the same thing. Now what we're busy our whole life is, he said, the Chovas Halvava writes, what takes people's energy away more than anything else is really nothing more than just trying to make things that are going to happen anyway, make them happen faster. Or things which are going to happen faster and try to push them off and delay it. But we don't realize that there's a gzer from Hashem about everything. The results, whatever's going to happen, there's a result, there's a gzer from Hashem, and Hashem's in charge. So by us trying to rush and go ahead and do things, we're not accomplishing anything. It's like the sa'ar. We're making the dough rise faster, but if we would just be patient, it's going to happen by itself anyway. So by us, you know, we're running and doing and being busy, but we're really focusing on just trying to outsmart Hashem. Hashem has a plan, and Hashem knows when everything's going to happen. And the remez of the sa'ar is that we have to have our emunah. We have to have our emunah that we shouldn't be the ones rushing and making it happen faster than it's going to. There's a process. There's a natural process of how Hashem is going to make the world run. And we have to kind of be spectators a little bit. I mean, we have to do our shtadlus. We have to do it. But we have to realize that we're in the hands of Hashem. And the time of year to focus on this is Pesach, because Pesach is the foundation of our emunah. I've said it many times, the story of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that he was once at a house of a family in Paris, in France. And on top of the piano, they had a piano, and on top of the piano there was a certificate. And it said that the name of a girl who had the last name of the people in the family, the name of a girl, and it said that she won the national prize for piano in the whole country. It's unbelievable. He asked, who is this girl that won this unbelievable prize? So they say it's our 6-year-old daughter. She's unbelievable. So he says, I can't, it's unbelievable. How could that be? A 6-year-old girl wins this prize. So they say, yeah, listen, you want to come hear her play? He says, yeah, I'd love to hear her play. So they call upstairs to the girl. They said, the rabbi wants to hear you play. Can you come down? So she says, so the girl says, well, tell the rabbi, if he doesn't believe me, he should just look at the certificate. I don't have to, I don't have to prove myself to everyone that comes and says, well, are you really the one? So Rabbi Sosslanter said that it's the same thing with our Emuna. That people come and say, well, does the Kodesh Baruch Hu really run the world? Does the Kodesh Baruch Hu really make miracles? So what he says is, I'm not going to prove it for every kaifer, for every person that comes and says, well, I don't believe and I need to see it for myself. I tell them to look at the certificate. I wrote in the Torah all the Nisim that happened in Yitzias Mitzrayim, and I wrote I watched over the Jewish people, and I took them out of Mitzrayim, and I performed miracles for them. And they just have to look in the Torah, and they'll have their Emunah. I don't have to show it for everybody. So really, the whole story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, that's why if you look in Kiddush, so many mitzvahs, we try to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, because it's the foundation of our whole Emunah. And Hashem did it once, and then he's going to say, that's our certificate. You just have to keep on looking back at that certificate. And the one time a year where we're really focusing and re-energizing ourselves in this idea is on Pesach. That's when we're actually reliving it. So it's not just saying over the story, but it's taking out and saying, listen, this is the one time a year we have to really focus on it now because this is our Emunah for the rest of, for the whole year. So, the Seder itself may be focused and people think it's focused on the father teaching the son, but really the job of teaching Emunah to the children is really the mother's job. You know, that's really where the children are going to learn it. So we really have to take out and as much as we can during the preparation, but more on the Yom Tov of Pesach and realize that this is the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim and think for a minute the miracles that happened. And it's real. The miracles really happened. One time, someone, I don't remember who it was that wrote the story, but he was walking by the Chafetz Chaim's house. And he heard the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim was obviously very careful in his hanhaga and what he did. And he heard him mamish laughing hysterically. And it's totally not like the Chafetz Chaim's personality. He was sitting there laughing, so he walks in, and the Chafetz Chaim is sitting there with a chumash in front of him. He thought there was someone telling him a joke or something. He has a chumash in front of him, so he asks the Chafetz Chaim, what are you laughing? So he says, well, I just read the pasuk that the sarim, the officers, and all of Paro's officers in Mitzrayim got shchin. They got these boils on their face, and they couldn't have come to Paro. So I'm thinking about it. Think about it for a minute. All these people, the whole country, sitting there, too embarrassed to leave their house because they have boils. No one can go anywhere, and the only person that can walk into Paro's office is Moshe Rabbeinu, because everyone else went home. Everyone else called in sick that day because they have their... So the Chafetz Chaim was mamish picturing it in his head and laughing because it was so real to him. And that's really the way for us to take out and use the opportunity of Pesach to realize this is real things that happened and this is the foundation of our Emunah. And then, in Hashem, before Zoicha, that we strengthen ourselves in our Emunah over Pesach, then we'll be able to do our job and the mothers will be able to do their job in bringing that Emunah to their children for the whole year and being mechazik the Emunah off the limudim from Pesach. And in Hashem, we shall be zoicha to have to be mekayim the mitzvahs properly, not be nichshal in any averus, and be zoicha to really take out the lessons of the Yom Tov.